So welcome to another edition of the Texas Observer podcast. I'm Dave Mann, editor of the Observer. We're going to talk Texas primaries today. We've got two members of the Observer staff, Forrest Wilder. Welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And Patrick Michaels.
Thank you for having me.
So we want to talk about the Texas primary, which is coming up on Tuesday, May 29th, which many people may not know. It certainly feels like this is the stealth primary. Forrest, you were just saying before we started recording that you don't feel like anybody really knows that there is a primary, what with redistricting and the date of the primary moving about six times. And we just had a city election here in Austin. So there seems to be a lot of confusion about the fact that there actually is an election here and it actually is kind of important.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like people are not tuned in. They're not aware, and I think, you know, it's reflected in the turnout numbers. Primary turnout usually is pretty low, but this year is even lower than normal. But, you know, at the same time, there's still these high-profile, pretty at least entertaining-to-watch races out there. So, I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're kind of, for people who follow politics, there's a lot of interesting races, but most of the voters are just not tuned in, not interested.
And that's what's disappointing, because in Texas, like, the primary is what matters. I mean, we're like a Republican state for the most part. And, you know, even in the districts that the Democrats do control, they're safe seats. So it's not like there's going to be a lot of competitive races in November, when I think a lot of people, because it's a presidential year, will probably come out to vote. But in Texas, that's not going to make that much of a difference. If you really want to have an impact on who's going to be in government, especially in a Republican primary, in a Republican-controlled state, you know, it is the primary, and yet we're just, you know, we're going to have like six people who are going to decide who's going to be in office Tuesday.
I mean, yeah, just from like the, perspective of wanting full participation in a representative democracy, it's a little disturbing that a tiny slice of the electorate is going to decide essentially who's going to win the general election, not just the primary, but the general election as well. Gerrymandered districts, like I said, I mean, it's just the primary winner is pretty much going to be the person that goes to the state house or to Congress or whatever.
Well, you really see that in the U.S. Senate race for the seat that Kay Bailey Hutchinson is leaving open. You know, we got Dewhurst, we got Ted Cruz, Leppert, and everybody's favorite candidate, Craig James. This is like who's going to win the Tea Party slice of the electorate, right? This is some small slice of the Republican primary voters are going to decide who's going to be the next senator, basically, for Texas, right? I mean, and that's exactly what you're getting at.
Yeah. Well, you don't think the Democrat has a chance?
I'm not going to go. Whoever, I'm not going to go on record answering that question.
So I guess the question now is: can Dewhurst pull out 50 plus one, avoid a runoff?
You want to talk about low turnout? I mean, the runoff election in July for
I think it's going to be about nine people. Right.
So if you get five, then you're golden.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Like, can Dewhurst pull it out, avoid a runoff, and take the thing, or do you think Cruz plus like whatever Leppert and Craig James mops up is enough to push it into a runoff?
I think avoiding a runoff in a four-way election period is incredibly difficult. Yeah. I mean, it was impressive that Rick Perry avoided a runoff in a three-way primary that they had in 2010 with Kay Bailey
and Deborah Medina.
Deborah Medina, yeah. And I mean, just what he dominated that election, and he just barely snuck over 50%.
Yeah,
and that was, you know, three people, and that was really impressive. Now you got four people, the electorate is even further divided.
Right.
You've got Leppert, who seems to be, you know, he's former mayor of Dallas, seems to be cutting into Dewhurst voters in terms of like being the slightly more mainstream Republican, at least when you compare that to Cruz and, you know, whoever Craig James is attracting.
Where is his base? The Craig James fans.
SMU fans.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
His family.
He
seems like the most hated guy in the state.
It was weird because he got in the race so late. And there was a lot of publicity around that. People were talking about him getting in for a long time, and he just didn't. And then he got in the race late, and he never really, just never really got any momentum going, except some of the kind of outlandish things that he said.
Such as?
Well.
Greatest hits reel.
Well, I mean, he made a remark about, you know, sex being for pleasure.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, I'm trying to paraphrase that. I'm not going to get the wording exactly right, but that was...
Not being for pleasure.
Yeah,
being,
exactly.
Being for procreation.
Yeah, exactly. He was echoing, was it Santorum that made that remark?
I would. That sounds like something Santorum would say, yeah.
This is what happens when I come to the podcast without right. notes.
Yeah. The phrase echoing
anyway,
Santorum.
Anyway, the point is...
The point is that I think everybody's waiting for, like... someone from that field to get hot, and it seems like it's been Cruz, mm-hmm. who's electrified, a unique part of the electorate. He's going for that Tea Party base. He's got the Sarah Palin endorsement. She's doing robocalls for him, some of which in Kansas.
right.
And so he seems to have caught on. He's like the number two challenger who's, you know, risen. And so... From Dewhurst's perspective, I think it's just inherently difficult to avoid a runoff in that kind of field. And so then the question is, who's going to be number two? Cruz seems like he's going to be the most dangerous. And you get into this runoff, low turnout. Who's going to have the most energized voters between Ted Cruz and David Dewhurst? Does David Dewhurst excite enough
That's
people?
What I was going to say. Who are the fired up David Dewhurst people? I mean, you know, he's kind of a weird guy. We did that profile of him. CIA operative, seems to wear makeup, is late to everything.
Cap roper.
Yeah, and...
Rodeo
know,
Hall of Fame.
You've named at least four demographics that could be key for him
there you go.
In the runoff.
I don't know. I mean, you know, there's definitely the critique of Ted Cruz, but the guy stands for something very palpable and very fresh and very real to a lot of people among Republicans. And with Dewhurst, it's just kind of like...
Stands for inevitability.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess it's just a comment on the political system. I don't know. But is there a fired up Dewhurst constituency out there?
I think mainstream Republicans who don't see themselves in the Tea Party section of things, who just haven't bought into Cruz for whatever reason. And Dewhurst is pitching himself as this, you know, conservative guy who's going to cut spending and you know, you might question his sincerity on that, on some of those things. He certainly doesn't always come off as the most sincere politician, but, you know, this guy is pitching himself as a, you know, straight line conservative. And so I think there are certainly conservative voters that like him. I think there's probably mainstream Republicans who look at the field and think, okay, this is the guy that's going to represent our values. You know, Cruz is too out there, you know. Dewhurst is a guy that and has experience in government. I mean,
right.
He wants somebody that mm-hmm. gets things done and is, you know, he's been lieutenant governor and running the Senate. That's your guy. If you're, right. if you're like a business Republican, that's your guy.
Right.
I'm sure that's the Dewhurst constituency. But again, like when you measure excitement levels, I don't know that Dewhurst excites anybody.
Right.
Where Ted Cruz probably does.
What about this? Like, what a letdown it's going to be next year if the state Senate doesn't get to fight over who's going to take Dewhurst's spot. Another thing. I mean, I'm looking forward to that a whole lot. And,
yeah.
You know, if it's just boring old David Dewhurst up there again.
Yeah. Well, it'd also be interesting to see if Cruz loses, what he does next. I mean, because, you know, I mean, the idea is that he's a rising star. Even if he doesn't win this race, there should be other opportunities that'll come along for him.
Attorney General,
yeah. Right. If Greg Abbott, you know, makes the move. Runs for governor.
Yeah, we ran a story by Anthony Zerker, the profile of Cruz, and it my takeaway from that story was that this guy, people are grooming him as the, like, yeah, rising star, and he's gonna get elected to something, whether it's the Senate or some statewide office. This guy is gonna be around. You know, he's Cuban parents. You know, he's got the Hispanic surname. He's young, smart. You know, argued before the Supreme Court. This guy's got the, like, resume that you would think would be a real rising star and somebody, if Democrats can field a capable statewide candidate, which is a big if.
Right.
This is the guy they're going to have to contend with for years to come. I mean, if you're looking for like the next Republican star, you know, Perry is kind of on the downward trend. You know, we can kind of see the end of his career probably. You know, somebody like Ted Cruz is like the next, is like the up and comer, right?
Well, I think what was the kind of subhead for the story was, you know, he could be the next Ronald Reagan if he could only win an election. Mm-hmm. So we shall see. So what are, I don't know, what are some of the other key races out there? Maybe not farther down the ballot, like House races. I think you wrote about Congressional mm-hmm. District 33, right?
Talking about races headed for a runoff. I mean, there are 11 Democratic candidates running for this new district. It goes kind of between Dallas and Fort Worth. It's anchored in both. And it was created, it's one of the new districts. It was created as a minority opportunity district. So, but it includes like a large Latino population and a large African-American population too. So when you say it's a minority opportunity district, it's kind of, you know, a mashup of both of those, those groups. So you have that sort of tension. There's the Dallas versus Fort Worth tension, and just sort of a crazy cast of characters.
How many people are in there?
11.
Mm-hmm. 11.
Yeah. So the top two kind of making the biggest show are State Representative Mark Vesey out of Fort Worth, and then Domingo Garcia, former state rep and former Dallas City Councilman, who's now a lawyer in Dallas. And so they've really kind of, just in the last couple of weeks, kind of made a really nasty race of it, especially. And like Garcia has said some pretty outlandish things. I mean, he VC had attacked him on, you know, a few times. And Garcia had at one point, you know, he'd called VC the errand boy for the establishment.
Errand boy, E-R-R-A-N-D.
Yes, yeah. not like a guy named Aaron,
right?
Who's young,
but or like, a knight or a knight errant.
No. So I mean, really, it's hard to fathom like who he thought he was going to win over with something, you know, is like, you know, racially tinged as that.
But who was he supposed to be? I'm sorry, who was he supposed to be an errand boy for?
So the fight started with a candidate forum in Fort Worth, I think, where Garcia had said some things about General Motors and American Airlines and Lockheed and all big employers in this district. But he'd been trying to strike this sort of populist note and talking about how, you know, corporations are killing people's livelihoods and, you know, the big corporate bosses, you know, he's trying to, you know, he's talked about like standing with the 99% and trying to walk. I mean, like, you know,
this is Domingo.
This is Domingo Garcia, okay. Like rich lawyer guy. And, you know, good luck with that. It's, you know, not the, you know, so he says those things in a candidate forum. And VC seizes on this as his opportunity to stand with the workers' unions, you know, and talk about, you know, the importance of jobs in this district, and says, you know, I can't believe that Domingo Garcia would say that kind of stuff.
But hold on a second. But Domingo Garcia was not attacking the workers. He was attacking the management.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so... Yeah, but is it really fair of VC to say that he was attacking the unions, the employees?
It's all well and good to, you know, like stand with the 99% and try to hop on the... You know, I'm sure that was some polling data that somebody had that's gone awry, but you don't want to be attacking the big employers in your potential district, right? Yeah. Those are, I mean, in the nation as a whole, those are big corporations that, yeah, might be screwing people over, but in your district, those are the employers, right? Those are the people that
No, I agree. Was there any basis for it? I mean, was there anything that the executives or the company was doing to its employees?
He wasn't talking locally. He was talking about, you know, the rich folks in the country have too much and the regular folks.
But he made it about the employers in the district. Okay.
Yeah.
So talking point that kind of went off the rails.
And it's maybe easier to say when you're in Dallas and you're not in Fort Worth, you know, in Arlington, where a lot of these you know, workers are based, you know, that's where right. That's where the factories are. Yeah, I mean, it was one of a few decisions that kind of maybe like sound good from, you know, at the very beginning, but then one or two steps down the line, it's not so well advised. And so VC kind of seized on that and said, well, you know, if you don't want these jobs in the district, then what are you trying to do? And that's when Garcia had his line about VC being the errand boy for the establishment. And so, anyway, so that's sort of been like a nasty turn in that race. You know, it's one of those where there are, you know, 11 candidates, you know, including some former city council members, some big lawyers in both cities. So it's probably headed for a runoff too.
Well, I think the two biggest like issues for me that I'm following in the primary are education, one, and two, the like plight of the Tea Party. And I feel like, and they're obviously related, but I feel like the education thing spans any number of races, from the Texas House to also the State Board of Education.
The Senate, like, too.
Yeah, and Senate. State Senate, yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, we had these incredible cuts last session. I mean, unprecedented cuts. And now we're coming back to an election that, you know, the electorate is going to be very different this time around than it was 2 years ago in 2010. I mean, it's a presidential year. Okay, we're not going to have nearly like the Tea Party dominance that we did in 2010. So to me, you know, if people are opposed to the cuts in education, it has to show up now. I mean, I hate to think what's going to happen if there isn't any blowback at all at the ballot box for cutting schools like this. So to me, looking at what, if any, blowback is going to be in any of these races from the education cuts, it's just like a huge issue. And especially in like these Republican primaries where you've got, you know, people who cut the school budget, running for re-election, being challenged by more pro-education people, you know, to me, that's, if you're looking for like a grand narrative, mm-hmm. or what could have the biggest impact next year or the year after, to me, that's it.
This is a really good example of where there's been a lot of buildup and like there's a strong narrative there, and then you just kind of have to see it. Like, is anyone going to turn out and vote in here to make an issue of that? And
that's, where are the test races?
So some of the biggest ones, Wayne Christian is one of these guys who has been part of the education cuts.
And the only Christian in the House.
There you go.
That's his tagline.
That's catchy.
Yeah, which is incredibly untrue. It's off by
the rest of them are
177, I think. Anyway. Yeah, the rest are Muslim. Yeah,
but so he's got a challenger in Chris Patti, who's the mayor of Marshall, who's not like especially, you know, we're not talking a school board member or a former teacher, but he's someone who is tight with the superintendent around there and some other superintendents in his potential district, and sort of is being supported in large part because he's not Wayne Christian, having made those education cuts.
Is that his campaign slogan?
Not Wayne Christian. Yeah. A Christian, not Wayne. But he's, you know, he's also like a talk radio host and the mayor of Marshall, which is a nice combination. So he could be the next Dan Patrick if he makes it in, you know, between him.
There's
and
only
him.
Room for one Dan Patrick. Yeah. Don't need another one.
This is maybe another narrative we could talk about. But Trent McKnight, the, speaking of great orators,
He brought down the House. He was stepping down as the FFA president, Future Farmers of America, and he sends a YouTube video of him. It's really one of the most incredible feats of rhetoric and oratory you'll ever see.
Just firing up everybody, talking about the, you know, he touches on religion and livestock.
Closes
and
with a saxophone solo.
He plays the saxophone on stage. He does a little superhero move. We should link to that. The page for the podcast. Anyway, he's another one who's supported by the Texas Parent PAC, sort of one of the big, you know, deciders of, you know, who's going to be seen as an education candidate. He's another guy. He's, you know, FFA experience is sort of, you know, one of the biggest things that he's got going for him. He's a big rural advocate.
It's kind of interesting, though. He started that site or helped found this. I think he helped found this. At least writes for it, ruraltopia.com, mm-hmm. which is trying to kind of, you know, express a uniquely rural values that, I mean, ideas are getting kind of lost as the state or the country urbanizes.
Mm-hmm.
Refresh my memory, where is he running?
He's in West Texas.
Is he against Landrieu?
It's not. He's running in a district that has been vacated.
Oh, by
yeah, Hardcastle has given him the nod as his pick to follow him in that House seat.
That's a hard act to follow.
Yeah.
Rick Hardcastle has the best accent in the legislature, did.
Well, McKnight could have one of the best accents and the best dance moves as well.
Nice.
And saxophone
skills. And sax skills, yeah.
So, I mean, how, when it comes to the public schools, how explicit are these candidates, like Trent McKnight, in talking about the damage that the cuts did, if there should be some restoration of funding, that sort of thing?
Some more than others. I mean, it's, you'll be hard-pressed to find a Republican candidate running on their, you know, school credentials, who wants to talk about spending a whole lot more money. you know, but what they will say is that that $5.4 billion last, you know, last session was too much, you know, and schools mm-hmm. are feeling it, and we need to find the money from somewhere else. And so one of the sort of interesting tensions here is that you have, you know, maybe not such a big Tea Party year as before, but it's still, there's the no new taxes, you know, Texans for Fiscal Responsibility pledge out there that a lot of folks are rushing to sign on to. One of the folks that I have written about who kind of fits into that is Amber Fulton, who's running in Lewisville, north of Dallas. And she's a school board member from there, a former school board member. And she's also signed on to this pledge saying she's not going to raise taxes while she's there. So she wants to talk about, you know, putting more money in the school system, but maybe finding it from somewhere else, not increasing overall spending. So that's the kind of school advocate that Parent PAC is looking at when they're picking candidates they want to support in the Republican primary, too.
Yeah, but you can put the money back in without raising taxes. There's $7-8 billion in the rainy day fund right mm-hmm. now, and sales tax receipts are up, right? So, I mean,
so it's an easy pitch.
There will be money.
Well, there's also going to be
raising taxes.
Well, that's what they're saying, though, isn't it?
There's also going to be a structural deficit, you know, that we'll have to deal with again. I mean, it's not.
And there's a huge gap in Medicaid, which is a whole other issue we'll
talk about.
Next session's going to be ugly.
I don't know if you know this, Dave, but sometimes politicians say stuff that they don't really mean.
But to me, I mean, a lot of what happens next session will be partly determined by what happens in this primary. Because, I mean, if you look back at, the 05 session, you know, there's about big voucher debate. A lot of the school board people were angry about what came out of that session, and you know, Parent PAC got involved there in the Republican primary in 2006, and was pretty successful in taking out some Republican incumbents they felt like were hostile to public schools, including Ken Grusendorf, who was the head of the House Education Committee, and was like the guy at the time, and that was like, you know, a warning shot. And I think when they came back in 2007, the dialogue on public schools was very different from a lot of the Republicans, partly because there were some new people, but also because politically people realized that there was some blowback. And now, this time around, again, I think you need to have some of that blowback if the conversation is going to change. Otherwise, if there's no fallout, like, we're going to get the same thing next mm-hmm. session that we got this past session.
I mean, but also remember there are challengers to incumbents who may have taken a more moderate line on the budget last session. There's also a general election coming up too, and there will be some close races between Republicans and Democrats where a lot of these themes will come up again. So, I mean, yeah, these GOP primary races are important for that, but I don't think it's not the end of the story before the session kicks off in January of next year, you know.
No, I agree it's not the end of the story, but it is. It's a big part of it.
Yeah.
So just, you know, one more thing on the stakes for education here. I mean, this it's a big round of primaries for that. I mean, not only are you talking about following up on those cuts from last session with maybe more cuts or trying not to cut anymore, but there's this blowback against standardized testing now, you know, that will definitely be an issue again, you know, when the legislature meets. There'll be people who want to make testing less of a part of what happens, you know, in Texas schools. And then, you know, probably by the end of this session, you know, there could be, a Supreme Court decision on the school finance suits that we have a special session. And these are the folks who are going to be deciding what the new school finance system looks like in the state.
But I think, I mean, the other large theme that we're following is what happens to some of the Tea Party freshmen who were elected in this, like, big wave in 2010, and were a little quirky and a little unusual.
Colorful.
Colorful in the 2011 session. You know, almost had Texas airports shut down. So these folks are running for re-election, and it's a kind of a test to see, I think, if the Tea Party has staying power or if that was kind of a one-year thing. And I think it's related to the education policy. I mean, you know, all these things are related, but you really see it come out in some of these East Texas races that you wrote about, mm-hmm. you know, with David Simpson, James White, trying to get re-elected. I'd like to connect that to a larger narrative. Well, those races are getting so ridiculous. And nasty, it's hard to know if if there's anything larger you can pull out of that.
Well, I mean, I think that those two races where you've got David Simpson, who is sort of a the essence of the Tea Party in some respects. Very, very interesting guy.
He's like 99.9% pure Tea Party.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and he's running against, or he's being challenged by Tommy Merritt, who's much more of a traditional East Texas type Republican. He's, you know, to me, he's conservative, but he's much more, but he's still more moderate than David Simpson. I mean, these are just degrees of how far out. I mean, Simpson is very far out there in a lot of respects. And then you've got two incumbents running against each other in House District 19, which is kind of deep East Texas. Tyler County, Newton, Jasper, I believe. There's one other county in there. You've got Tuffy Hamilton, who's maybe more in the Tommy Merritt kind of mold. And then you've got James White, who is a freshman who, in a surprise victory, beat out the Democrat in 2010, Jim McReynolds. Nobody expected him to win, except maybe Abby Rappaport, who profiled James White extensively. And James White's an interesting character. He's an African-American former school teacher who's extremely conservative. Empower Texans gave him an A-plus rating. I mean, he had almost across-the-board votes on, like, you know, the budget cuts, socially conservative issues. And both those races have gotten very ugly. It's kind of, I think it's pitting this Tea Party ideal against people who are conservative, small government, but are still more pragmatic, that are still more, they're less rigidly ideological and on some sort of crusade.
What does Tuffy Hamilton have? I mean, if James White has got this like conservative thing down the line, and is getting really high marks in what I assume is a pretty, you know, I would assume the Republican electorate in that district is pretty conservative. And this is like right on the Louisiana border of this district, I would assume, pretty close to it.
Yeah.
What does Tuffy Hamilton have on James White? I mean, besides, I mean, I know he's dug out some of that dirt, and Tuffy was in the restaurant business for a while, but like, what is Tuffy's pitch to be like, I should be in there instead of James White?
I don't know. I tried to interview him. the only thing I got out of him, people have had a hard time interviewing him, I guess, since he came out and with these records from the Livingston School District where James White used to teach. There was some, Tuffy Hamilton's campaign got them through an open records request, and basically James White, some parents and students complained about some weird remarks that he made of a sexual and profane manner in the classroom. Well, what it turned out that it was is that basically three different things. James White had used the words hell and damn in the classroom, scandalized some people. Two, he talked about Lawrence v. Texas, which is the sodomy case that the Supreme Court struck down Texas sodomy laws in 2003-2005, mentioned it in class, and I doubt he's in favor of sodomy. But and then three, and this is the one where it's sort of odd, in explaining economics, he made some remarks about some strange remarks that involved things of a sexual nature. And so this was Tuffy's big, you know, revelation to kind of paint James White as a weirdo.
And basically mentioning that people sleep together sometimes.
Yes.
With the remarks. It was right. Nothing about like, well, look at you out here in the audience, in the classroom, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and you know, and then
Tuffy's in his glass house there.
Yeah, Tuffy's in the glass house because during the session, he went to the back mic while Representative Marissa Marquez, she's a Democrat from El Paso, was talking about some legislation that would have funded a tramway at the Franklin Mountain State Park in the El Paso area. And Tuffy went to the back mic and called her young lady twice, and then asked her basically to. Are those mountains real or not? Referring to her breasts. And so for some reason that really didn't get as much attention as it probably should have. It was just a very, you know, inappropriate and grotesque remark. And Texas Monthly gave him a dishonorable mention for it, but didn't actually mention what he had done. So anyway, I called him to ask him about it, and he just said, that was taken out of context. I'll call you back later. And then I never heard from him again.
My question is, why do you need a tramway at the Franklin Mountain State Park in a budget deficit
session? Well, I don't know, because it's why people go there. I've actually never been there.
Could have been another question he might have asked instead.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, he's been around for a while. He's in charge of the licensing committee, which is, you know, powerful. I just think it's a similar dynamic to the Merritt Simpson race in that, you know, Tuffy Hamilton maybe appeal a little bit more to like traditional, more moderate, mainstream type voters.
Well, it's interesting your story. I mean, you've kind of talked to the county party chair, and it seemed like there were almost like two Republican parties forming. One that was more the kind of mainstream Republicans, and then you got the Tea Party folks, and they had elected separate people to go to the...
That's the Simpson Merritt thing.
Yeah, state party convention.
That district now, two counties, Upshur and Gregg County. The Upshur County GOP is split into two factions, one of which is on the Simpson side and one of which is on the Merritt side. Now, that's not why they split, but that's the dynamic that's resulted. And I talked to the pro-Merritt guy, Ken Ambrose, who had some very harsh things to say, not just about David Simpson, but kind of about the whole Tea Party wing of the party in general. Basically, you know, accusing him of being anti-Semitic, accuse them of being crazy religious fundamentalists, accuse them of being against government, wanted to unrealistically shut down all these programs, said that David Simpson was on some wild ideological crusade and was living in la-la land. So no love lost up there in Upshur County between those two camps. But I think that in a sense, I mean, he's getting at something true, which is, do you elect a state representative to go do constitutional warfare with the TSA?
Well, hold on a minute. Number one, I like David Simpson.
I do too.
He's very straightforward. Yes, and he's a great interview. And two, I did like the TSA bill. I'll confess to that. And every time I'm in line at the airport, I think about that. Well, you know, look, I'm not gonna go on a rant about the.
They don't let you wear your tin hat through the.
Yeah. No, look, okay. I mean, full disclosure, I agree with the sentiment, but I'm sorry, the Texas legislature, that is not the place to be dealing with.
But they did that on everything.
National security.
I mean, I think David Simpson at least put the lie to a lot of this rhetoric from people like David Dewhurst, who was all out, and Perry, too, was all out there talking about 10th Amendment this, 10th Amendment that, nullification, anti-federal government, blah, 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 and nothing ever, they had that committee. They had the nullification committee in the House.
Well, the state sovereignty committee.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of this crazy stuff was coming out of there. And then... when they actually get a bill where you can, where they actually are a situation where they can actually take on the federal government, and the Justice Department gets on the phone and says you can't do that, and they fold like a house of cards. David Dewhurst folded quicker than, you know, you can say folded. And to me, that just, you know, you have to respect Simpson's purity, even if he didn't. There wasn't a whole lot you can do from the state's perspective. I at least respect the effort.
I guess,
and the consistency, you know, versus what we saw from David Dewhurst and Rick Perry on that issue.
Well, I don't think that the only dynamic here was between David Simpson and like David Dewhurst and Rick Perry. I mean, the fact was that the bill wasn't going to happen. It's unrealistic, and it's in the midst of this session where they're trying to figure out what to do with a $27 billion budget deficit. So to me, I mean, the best thing you'd say about it was quixotic, and the worst thing you'd say is that it was just some loony ideological crusade taking place in the wrong legislative body. I mean, if you're concerned about that, that's, you know, that sort of thing, then
it is. I don't think it's appropriate for state legislature to register anger or opposition to a federal agency that I personally think has crossed the line a number of times. I mean, what, you know, that happens a lot. Especially the Texas legislature, where you have, you know, where you have these bills that are expressing anger of the federal government or requesting the Texas delegation do something in D.C. I mean,
it's all about the 10th Amendment. And look, if you're really concerned about civil liberties, then you should be looking at DPS practices. You should be looking at police practices. There's plenty of things, the fusion centers. There's plenty of things that you could be dealing with that in a legislature you can actually have a policy legislative impact on. That's my only point. But on the other hand, I agree the problem with David Simpson for most of the rest of the GOP and the legislators, the Republican Party, is that while they may say certain things, the wink and a nod, this guy seems not just to actually believe it in his heart of hearts, but he's willing to act on it even when the rest of the world thinks he looks like a fool.
So I mean, I think one of the interesting things about this race between Simpson and Merritt is that that's not sort of what they're fighting about. You know, it's not, you know, the anti-Simpson stuff is not, you know, he's picking the wrong battles and he's too far out there, but it's stuff taken out of context or kind of warped, like, you know, the mailers about how Simpson wants terrorists to have free reign of our skies.
Oh, right.
You know, yeah. Or he doesn't want veterans to fly their flags.
Well, that's what Merritt is getting at that, but he's getting at it for that electorate. Where he's and one of the flyers basically accuse or mailers basically accuses Simpson of being a terrorist sympathizer, or at least like being okay with letting terrorists get through airports, has the mugshots of the 9/11 hijackers on it. The other one accuses him of being soft on border security for a vote that didn't really happen the way that it's described in there, and has an image of hangings in Mexico done by narco terrorists or whatever. Drug cartels, and I mean it's the ugliest mailer I've seen this season.
You feel like what he's really trying to say is that Simpson is just too far out there.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's pretty explicit. I mean, the text is basically, has David Simpson lost his mind, or what planet is he living on? I mean, the way he's doing it is sort of
unfair,
yeah. Especially in the case of the border security one, and it's ugly and it's cheap and tawdry. What he's basically saying is playing on this, I would imagine, notion that a lot of people have, that Dave Simpson's kind of a loony.
I mean, so we talked a lot about that particular dynamic, and I think it's especially stark with David Simpson because he is so, like, such a purist. But I think that's a dynamic that we see in a number of different districts in these primaries, in these Texas House primaries across the state. He talked about that split and the Upshur County Party. I mean, I think there are quite a few counties where there are a similar split, if not explicitly. It's in there where you've got these factions, and you can see the fissures within the Republican Party because they're so dominant, you know, cracking. Whereas some of these more mainstream corporate Republicans look at the Tea Party folks and think, you got to be kidding. I
mean, right.
There's no way.
And some of them can't bite their tongues.
Yeah. And I think that's just, I mean, all over the state in a lot of different districts, I think that's just a fascinating dynamic. And it'll have a direct impact, could have a direct impact on what the education debate will be next session. Well, I think we should call it a podcast there. Reminder, everybody, go vote Tuesday and in the upcoming runoff.
Be a part of the 1% that actually votes.